Good morning, Jason.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, Mallory.
Hello.
I think that Jakob might be joining us today. He's back. I think he's back anyway. Morning, Seb. Okay, we can get started. I think it's might just be us, I guess. We mostly have a couple of broker tickets that I hope that Jakob will be ready to jump in on. There's some limitations on Alma's side in terms of what they can do for costs, and so there's this transferring the delivery cost to the offered cost field just so that it shows up properly in reporting and in WaterS. So I think that will be helpful. And I'm thinking that Jakob might also have a ticket open for adding a note that lists the cost that we send when creating a request, because right now there's no way for it to show up in the Alma UI. So we're working on a few fiddly pay for peer things with Alma. And not listed here because I think David assigned it back to me, but we added a pay for peer network, which is kind of a catch-all for all partners who participate in that, and it's the l last priority network in their directory configuration. So hopefully things are behaving better for Trove going forward. And I know Ian's not here. But we still are getting reports of system emails not being sent, so document delivered and end of rota. So when he's back, I think this is gonna have to get bumped from a P3 to a P2 because especially document delivered, like those requests just go to the they go to a terminal state, so they don't even show up in your UI anymore once you have the document, so that's not super helpful. This is the max cost note I was talking about that Jakob's working on. Apparently that's ready for review, so I'll be doing that. All right, Jason, how are things going?
Oh, they're going so I thought I had something. I remembered that we'd been seeing a whole bunch of transactions piling up in the database. And so during that discussion on Friday, when we were trying to troubleshoot all these timeouts, and we'd end up settling on, hey, Adam's just going to fix so copy, which is awesome, and get that done once and for all. That it occurred to me that, yeah, I was really meaning to look at the reporting service. And so I looked at the reporting service, and not only did I see a way to cut down on the stuff that was keeping database connections open too long and transactions open too long. But for some reason, I convinced myself that, hey, it was caching all the PDFs. Like every pull slip it sends, it just stores in memory. And so I jumped into fixing those, only to find out yesterday when I was putting a bow on it that actually it was the cached reports thingy was actually for the reporting templates.
Wait, what do you mean by reporting templates?
Like the ones that you like the pull slip templates. Like the Jasper thingy, you put the pull
Oh,
slip.
okay. I see. I see.
In the settings. And it doesn't matter if it's caching all of those because you're not going to be using more than like none of them. So it's fine. Oops. And I got a little further with the thing I was actually supposed to be doing, which is the translations for ZFL. And I did all the ones in the directory, except for the, like I left some comments on the issue there, but I hope we don't need to translate the custom properties that they explicitly said they don't use. That's a little bit out of the way. And the setting is a lot out of the way.
So this is like we probably need to ask Deborah and or Tara to like work with ZFL folks about like this, or is it like something we're just gonna decide on?
Well, I'll do for now to finish up. Like I have a longish comment there where I outlined all the, because it really isn't just like the translations. It's four or five separate things that currently are getting their translations from the back end and need to have the translations move to the front end. Kind of like the ref data, but most of them aren't ref data. And so, yeah, that's what's involved in that. And I figure it's worth it for the ones that are user, like day-to-day user facing. But the one that would take the most work would be the one where the entire settings section is handled by a CAN component. And for the ref data settings, it's just using the labels from the ref data. So not only do I have to come up with an alternative for the setting, but also for the settings section. It's all doable. It's just like, do we want to spend that much time on this right now?
Yeah, I feel like if it's not something that's being used like daily in a workflow process, like it's probably not worth the time. At least that's
Especially at
how
this
I.
juncture,
Yeah.
when maybe I should be looking into the email thing somehow. Or at least trying to think of a way to look into the email thing.
I think that's fair.
But of course, like it's one we can't reproduce, so that's fun.
The
Where are
email.
we with that issue with the email stuff getting sent as like a huge wave all at once? Did the changes to a copy ever go through to mitigate that, or are we still waiting on? I don't think Ian deployed that. And I think there were still issues with the changes the last time he tried to.
So is that related to this email issue, or is that a different email issue?
That was the exceptions with the timeout, but that could very well be related to the email issue if the timeout is mod email getting overloaded and it's happening during the timer task. So maybe it just doesn't send the rest of the emails at that point. I don't know. Ooh.
I think it's two separate, or like I think they're related, but they're slightly different. At least from my perspective, there's these notice policies, which I don't know. Maybe I don't have them set up in Sydney, but we're supposed to have notice policies with document delivered and a rota, and those are supposed to be sent in real time. So,
I don't think that button does anything.
well, so I don't know what's happening, but these are the ones that aren't sending that they've reported in this ticket. However, we have since set up the pull slip notifications, which are supposed to be sent at, I set all of the Trove production sites with 8 a.m. and noon. I didn't realize that I was going to break things trying to have these sent at the same times, but you have to actually schedule specific dates and times, or days of the week and times. And so I think this might be that bulk thing that's causing a problem where it's trying to send, 300 plus tenant pull slip
Well, no,
messages.
that wasn't
Oh.
even ModRS sending stuff, the 300 plus thing. That was Mod Email's very own check for messages that had timed out or something like that, and other cleanup that it's doing for itself. However, because it's a scheduled thingy and it's going to Mod Email, that still causes a copy to hit Mod Email very hard. And that was within 20 seconds of when ModRS tries to hit Mod Email. And of course, in general, that's these timers are being hit all at the same time by a copy. So it really, really would be interesting to know if the Okapi fix makes the email problem go away, because it might.
Now, I gotta be honest, like the stuff that with the Okapi changes that Ian was trying to make last week that we didn't end up pushing to prod because we
It
had
didn't work.
problems in Tro. Well, yeah, I don't, I'm not really, I this one this is a little above, like a little outside of my scope of understanding. So I was just trying to do testing to make sure things looked right, but I don't really understand specifically like what the Okapi fix was trying to do and how that relates to emails. We could try to test intro test if a change was made, but I'm not even sure he might have reverted what he did there.
I think that's what I remember from Slack, that it didn't work, so he reverted it and Adam was going to look at something, but I don't know where
Yeah.
that's at. And hopefully, like, it was the idea that he's going to delegate that to someone else to work on keeping ModRS updated and stuff for Trove and while he's gone, or were we just expecting everything just to stay constant? I don't know.
Jakob looped in Wayne and asked him
Okay.
to do some changes today.
Okay. So in
And
that case,
so,
it
yeah.
maybe Adam and Wayne are talking, and then we'll hear about the new copy. Because that I think that might actually be worth having a certain amount of urgency about, because it sounds like it's really actually impacting production significantly. And if Adam has a new Okapi that we can try that's going to address that, then that's probably worth expediting.
Yeah, I think.
I can briefly explain what that's about.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to know a little
I
bit
think it'd be
more.
good for you to be in the loop. So the way things like the notice emails are handled is it's actually Okapi that's doing the timing. And so Okapi is the thing that when you make a request into any sort of Folio-ish system like Reshare, that it routes your message to some particular module that's handling it. And so you're never directly connecting from the outside into the thing like ModRS. You're connecting to a copy and it's connected to ModRS.
Okay.
And that's how it knows. And Okapi's managing as well the tenants and the logins and everything else. And so it just lets ModRS out, you're this tenant, you're this user. And so that's how ModRS, that's why it has to go through Okapi to know what tenant the timer task is running for. And Okapi will actually send a request to the, I can't even remember what it's called, but something endpoint
Oh,
of,
you're talking
let's call
about
it
the.
timer, of ModRS, so the timer endpoint. And ModRS has this background task service that runs in response to a request to the timer endpoint. And then it will do things for the tenant that this request came in for, that tenant has scheduled to happen at that point. Because I get Okapi is set to run that every 2 or 5 minutes or whatever. And then every 2 or 5 minutes, Okapi hits that timer endpoint of ModRS. ModRS then goes and then for that tenant looks up, okay, what is scheduled to happen right now? Is there anything where they're like, it's supposed to happen every hour or every day or whatever? Is there anything that's due? And then it runs those things. Now, the problem is Okapi currently is set up to do that every 2 minutes all at once. So it sends all 400 of them. And Mod Email also has a timer task or two, and it sends all of them all at once. And this is probably overwhelming Mod Email, and that's probably why it's saying timeout, because it's really unresponsive.
Jakob just joined. I don't know if Jakob knows more. I think we went out about whether the what happened to the fix and what the future plan is. Is that right?
Yeah, we're wondering if the current situation with Okapi is in terms of the timer fix.
Hey guys.
Hey.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I don't like that solution that Adam implemented. I don't think that solution works, and that solution causes other trouble. So I
uh-oh.
think we need to, I wrote to Wayne to roll it back.
Okay, so should we switch then to putting that delay in ModRS?
Well, probably not. I want to have a conversation with Adam on his back. I think he's off today. So when he's back, I'm gonna chat with him tomorrow morning and maybe discuss a different solution. I mean, if you fix it in ModRS, it only fixes, you know, one part of the problem. But I think that there is an issue as you described, right? I mean, there's just the system gets overwhelmed in various places.
Do we know if Ian had made the change to run Mod Email's timer externally?
Probably he did experiment with something, but based on what Wayne wrote yesterday, that wasn't really in place in what in 12 test, and
So not
that
in production, clearly.
I don't know, to be honest. I mean, we need somebody from DevOps to kind of get this all cleaned up.
So the
So
problem is that we are having real issues in fraud. Like this is impacting them. This is preventing non-returnable requests. This is preventing the material from being sent to the patron because that's the document delivered email or whatever. Like that's it's not working as a system anymore. Like they basically can't do non-returnables reliably. And
yeah, it is a problem. Yeah, I
And
think we need
but we don't
to. We
even
need
know.
to.
We don't even know this is actually happening. Like we know that it's putting timeouts in the log file, but we don't know for sure that those timeouts are because of the timer task, and we don't know for sure that that's why these emails aren't getting delivered. We just, it seems likely that that's the case.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a shame that Ian isn't here, but I don't know. I mean, he's been doing a little bit of investigation on that front, so So somebody needs to resume that, and I think that's when, since there is nobody else around. So we probably need to talk to him. I'm gonna ping him today, but he's also kind of just starting with this, so not sure how far he can get. But it will be good to review logs across the board and see if there's anything in those modules that are being called, stuff that gets stuck. I think because there's the, you know, there's this flurry of requests, database connections are getting exhausted and things get generally stuck. At least that's what we saw on 12 test. So that could very well be happening in prod as well. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I think first of all, we should do a little bit of digging. So I'm gonna wait, ask Wayne to do this. I should probably create a task for him to do it. And then when Adam's back, I'm just going to discuss some smarter solution because I think that solution that he implemented, that's kind of like a brute force solution, which causes a bunch of other issues. So one thing that I'm seeing right now is that with this limit set on test, the Okapi hook's job is never finishing. So basically, it limits so much that enabling a new module version for tenants is not getting through. So I mean, it just the system gets generally stuck. And I don't think the system is really able to work in this bounded modes. So we need to kick that out. And so I did ask me to do it. And then the other thing is we need them to review the logs on prod, dig a bit deeper. And then I think we'll decide what to do next. Because right now we just don't know enough. I mean, you did a little bit of investigation. I saw this, Jason, so that's helpful, but I think we need to get a bit get more information.
Yeah,
So
the
yeah.
other option we had to play with, that I don't know if Wayne was following that conversation, but it might be worth mentioning the idea of putting Nginx in front of it with the rate limiting.
Well, the reason why I don't think that's gonna work is that the solution that Adam implemented is kind of like that, right? I mean, the solution essentially is like a rate limiter.
Yeah, but it's across
So,
Okapi going to every service, so this would be on a per service basis.
yeah, maybe something per service is could work. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's kind of hard to say right now, but I just think that there should be a way to implement something that is a bit less brute force, you
You mean
know.
like stagger the timers? Like just have it introduce noise?
Yeah, you know, introduce some jitter to those timers. I mean, it's really the way this is implemented in Okapi is just totally dumb. So, yeah, we just need to spread that load a little bit, and I don't think that should be rocket science. So yeah, but I need to chat with him a little bit though, when he's back. But it's a good idea to put Wayne on collecting a bit more information today. So I'm gonna ping him. Yeah, and then we you know we'll decide what to do next.
What's the take, Mallory, on how broken this is in production? Because we have a meeting with the senior Trove team later this week, and this if something if it's really the case that non-returnables are not working, then this is probably a P1. Like that's a major system outage. Is that really the case?
Well, they've reported that some tenants, like they gave me some specific tenants that they were having issues with not receiving these emails. And because it's not actual patrons submitting requests and it's staff submitting requests, they know where to get the URL out of the UI so they can go to the details page and get the URL if they don't receive the email. But yeah, it sounds to me like a general issue, but I don't know if it's happening at every tenant. It's difficult for me to test because when you log into like any of the tenants in prod, we've configured the system email for like I can't try to test this and set my own email up for a new request. You know what I mean? I'm trying to so like if I created a test request in here, the email is set to the real library's dock delivery address. So like I can't edit this to put mine in. So I'm not able to like necessarily replicate unless I place a real request in here. Which isn't helpful. But they haven't said like it's not working at every single tenant. You know, they did specify specific examples.
Would you
So
be able to test it if you change the configuration of one of the big test tenants in pod?
one of the test tenants in prod.
Yeah, don't we have a couple, don't we, that we use for testing in prod?
Yeah, these ones are configured with the NLA or the Trove team e email address, but I could probably change the directory entry and do some testing with with that here and just see if it's happening in
It does, I guess.
TSX.
I'm hoping maybe we would know if it was something that broke it for everybody, but it doesn't feel great for sure. But okay, so I'm hearing you say that there's a staff workaround as well. Is this also impacting automated printing of poll slips, or automated emails for polls for new requests coming in somehow, or is it only an issue with these non-returnable emails?
I don't, as far as I can tell, they're also not getting the poll slip notifications. I have myself set up to receive poll slips in TSOX and T6, and I have not received, I have my email address here. Like, I haven't received any poll slips, when we've done testing. And so I don't know, in regard to this, I've started down a rabbit hole. I wonder if, because we don't have the autoresponder, I haven't been able to get the poll slips to work in Sydney or Melbourne either, just as an aside. But I wonder if, because Trove doesn't have the autoresponder on, all of their requests come into the new status and don't go immediately to awaiting poll slip printing if a copy is found during the
Cross.
lookup. Yeah, so I'm wondering if the trigger for these is just not working because the requests are just sitting in the new status when they're new instead of awaiting poll slip printing. Does that make sense?
Okay.
J Jason, did you confirm that the socket exception happens when sending to mod email?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure the timeout that we were seeing happens when it's trying to post to mod email. That I think is
Yeah.
where I saw it.
Because like it's a timeout hitting on a copy service of some sort, and it was in the notice service, but I can't remember if that stack trace actually specifically referenced mod email. But if it's the notice service hitting on a copy service, I think mod email is the only one it hits. So we indirectly have confirmation of that.
Okay. Yeah, we have plenty to collect the logs from the email, but it doesn't. doesn't hit the module directly, right? It hits Okapi. Maybe there's already some exhaustion happening in Okapi with those connections. Okay. So Mallory, let's create a ticket for sort of the user issue, because so far we've been kind of operating on the assumption that we're seeing some exceptions in the log and we want to fix them. But if this is causing some service disruption, then it should get more priority.
For pull slips or for this one that's like for document delivered and
Well, everything that goes wrong, right? I mean, maybe there's a couple of tickets, I don't know.
Well, it sounds like the pull slips are different in that they're happening even in our non-loaded test system. So there's a more fundamental issue with the pull slips.
So maybe it's the tickets.
The pull slip one, if you want, I could probably actually fix that one because like we can reproduce it in dev. So
yeah, so let's get that for pull slips created, and then assign to JSON for investigation, and then yeah, and then did we ever actually hear from them about those delivery emails missing?
Like, have they
For
noticed yet?
that they're
It
not
sounds like
getting
they
pull
did.
slip.
No, the delivery emails.
Yeah, I have a ticket open that Ian has for not getting the document delivery emails. Because he was looking at that.
Let's reassign that to Wayne.
Okay. I mean, I haven't tested t Trove test and they're set up to go to NLA, which isn't great either. So, but at least in Sydney and Melbourne, we can look at that. Okay. Jason, I'll add more details to this after the meeting, but I just wanted to get a placeholder.
Yeah, for sure.
So this one you think I should assign to Wayne. This is about notifications for request unfilled and document available.
Now let's put a note there that we think this is related to the socket exception we're seeing in the logs. I can put that note. That's fine. I'll
Okay.
do it.
All right. Thank you. All right. So yeah. Oh, I don't remember that one now. I mean, we'll show up in this list, but okay. Oh, Wayne. Okay. Some tenants not receiving email notifications. So Jason, you'll help look into this pull slip notification issue. This is also the one that I was mentioning that I'm manually adding the settings to like the pull slip notification settings, and I've gotten through about half of the tenants. So if I need to adjust the schedule and not make them all 8 and 12, let me know as we play around in this, because that's a question I've been kind of curious about if that's any part of this.
That's not something you should manually have to do for 400 tenants. That's bizarre.
Well, it was this interesting thing where Ian was able to, he could upload the JRXML file here to the pull slip report. And he could also create this template for me, but the actual like this is like a three-step process. The actual notification I think was like more complicated. It was the same thing with these notice policies. He could load the notice templates, these three ch notice templates, but then I and Julie worked on creating the actual notice policy. So I don't know, there's something like more complicated with the notification piece configuration, but
I don't know why it's not something that you can script. I mean, ultimately the front end is just sending a request to the back end to create that schedule. So whatever that request is, you could send it from a script as easily as from the, you would think. I don't know. If I think
Yeah.
maybe asking one of us to look into what UIRS is sending and help him make that script is better than asking you guys to manually log in through 400 tenants.
Okay, I can create something for that.
That should be scriptable. Anyhow, so you're saying that the
Christoph.
post let the
No, I'm sorry, Jason, just so quickly. So yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
maybe let's create a script for that. I think that's the operations side, right? This is setting post loops up in tenants. That should be automated, right?
Yeah.
And Mallory, just to go back to that tickets that we just assigned to Wayne, should that priority on this be bumped? It's P3 right now.
I mean, I think so. Like, I'm surprised they aren't raising more of a think about this, but
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think
I
it's
think they
fine.
have a lot of tickets right now, 'cause I'm getting a lot of support tickets, which means that they're getting a lot of, because it goes, support tickets first go to Trove, and then they submit them to Caval, and then any that I get are have gone through two rounds of exploration. So I think that they're probably just a little overwhelmed with like answering questions right now, and especially with the pay for peer go live. So that might be why they haven't been chasing this one, because it's been in our queue for a little while. But yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, Jason. Over to you.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I basically need to look into how the postlet stuff even works, because I don't think I've actually been familiar with that, certainly not recently. And it would be useful to just confirm. So you're saying that you can't get it to send postlets at all on either the staging tenants or the dev tenants, and that no one has ever gotten this working in prod either. Like, this basically, as far as we know, post slips aren't happening for Trove, and you think it's because it's somehow tied into the autoresponder.
Yeah, that's my current guess, because yeah, I can't get them through Sydney and Melbourne. So we should be able to test here at least.
Yeah, so that's the first step, is we should get that at least happening for Sydney and Melbourne.
So I'll create a bunch of requests. And what I'm just curious if, like, I didn't get pull slip notifications for these because they're in the new state instead of the awaiting pull slip printing state. So I could just update these and see if I actually get them. Well,
Okay, no, I just needed that because I'm going to go and read the code to see if we even expect this to work in a Trove kind of situation. And then some more specifics on what actually triggers a notice to be sent and what we should look for in the logs, that kind of thing. And if it does seem like it should be working, then we can try to test it again, but having an idea what to look out for in the logs. Otherwise, I'll try to modify something so that it actually has a hope of working, and then we can try it again that way.
Okay, thank you very, very much. That'll be great to sort out.
All right, will you?
Jason, regarding that Zeta file issue, maybe we should drop this JSON encoding from your from the current sprints.
I may as well, like, I was sort of pending responses there, but I've just got these two little pieces that I was going to finish up there. I guess it's sort of partially done, but it would also be a matter of like 2 hours.
No. I mean, yeah, this one we need to finish, right? I think Tara's waiting for this, but there was another ticket to add JSON encoded values. Maybe that we should
Oh yeah, that
do I.
we don't need that button is on hold. I set it to on hold because I don't know if we even want to do that now that we're changing the delimiter.
Yeah, agree. So let's track it from the sprint, Mallory.
Just get it out of here.
Yeah. And then so where are we with the other tickets, Jason? So I'm just looking at your updates here. So you're asking if it's important to backport to 118.
Yeah, because right now
No, that's shit, that's not the ticket. Sorry, that's the hard-coded phrases. That's a different one. So where are we with the thing? Okay.
I said, I just got a couple hours left in that. Like, I just got to do the one vocabulary, and then I have to come up with something for the tags and the managed thing. Because it's getting these strings out of directory.
Okay.
And we want the translated version. So.
Yeah, that's good. But what about the call number, the delimiter stuff?
I just got a message this morning from David that he's now deployed that to SLNP3 and 4. And so we need just someone to test it.
Okay, gotcha. Good.
And I
So
was going
we
to go put a comment in the issue after this call.
okay, cool. Thank you. All right, Mallory, I don't know, did you guys already discussed what was this latest issue that you created or mentioned? This offered cost.
Yeah, so this one is where Alma, when they set a cost when they deliver an item, it comes into this delivery cost field. But we use the offered cost field, and I think oh I'm not sure about this question. I didn't know that you added that. Yeah.
Yeah, so regarding cost negotiation, right? Because the max cost, you created that separate ticket, I fixed that. So I think you'll need to review this somehow. But this is specifically for the cost negotiation, right? When they bump it. Do you know if they can even see the value? So they're sending the delivery cost because they cannot set the offered cost from Alma. But when they receive an Alma, can they see the offered cost? No.
Well, they can, if Alma is the requester, they are getting that human readable note that you put in that they have to accept or reject it.
Gotcha.
But when they is I think when they accept a price or a cost, that they are setting that in, they have to set that in their own request. And I think they're using the max fee field. But when almost the supplier, they are negotiating a cost outside, like using messaging or something, and then how they are sending the actual agreed upon cost is in the shipping cost field. Because I don't think they don't have any conditions, like they don't have any way to do conditionals right now. So
Yeah, they don't have a way
yeah.
to set the offered cost, right? But they have a way to set the delivery cost.
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. So that makes sense to me. So we can do what I wrote here, which is we can transfer that value over to the offered cost so that whatever else can see it. And also reporting, it's we'll be looking at a single place. But should we do the inverse? Should we set the delivery toast when we receive a message from Reacher acting as a supplier, so that they can see that cost and the offered cost and the delivery cost?
I think I'd have to ask them. I'm not sure. Because they're not seeing. Wait, yeah. I guess
Yeah,
I'm
they
not
can.
sure what they're seeing.
Yeah. Check with them. I think if they're able to set the delivery cost, then it means that they're seeing that field. So it would be sort of natural for them to also get it set when they receive the message. But this would
Yeah.
it would be good to verify that.
Yeah, I'd like to ch check with them on that, 'cause like they've kind of sorted out a bunch of like workarounds for this Alma situation, so I don't want to like change things without making sure that that would be helpful.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I will work on that. Yeah, this Ulma pay for peer business is pretty complicated. Yeah.
Besides this issue, is there anything else that they raised?
For Ulma? No, I mean, you already added, I haven't QA'd it, but I saw that you added the note here. I think that they will be very happy about that. Is this something that this was a broker change, right? So can this be put on Trove test so that they could do some playing around with that?
Yeah, I did put it on test, so
Okay.
you can ask them to do it.
Yep.
Unless you have a way to do it with Alan or somebody else with Alma, we don't really have a good way to test.
Yeah, I can try to test with. I was supposed to meet with Alan yesterday, and that has not happened. So maybe I'll get a chance to meet with him soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Cool. So yeah. Yeah, let's just verify the other one. We can slice it in two, right? I mean, anyway, so I'll add the offer cost, the transferring of the offer cost to the delivery cost when receiving a message from Alma, and then let's verify on the other sort of side. And we can always add it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you for proposing that. It's probably not a bad
Sure.
idea.
And just to confirm, when we were looking at our reporting, right, we were looking what is the invoicing cost? Is it where did we land with this? Where I can remember, are we adjusting the maximum cost, and that's what we were looking at when we were reporting, or are we looking at the last offered cost?
Well, it's complicated, and I think Julie did have some questions for you about that. The thing is like if a new cost is not negotiated, like if it's just everyone agrees they're gonna pay the $20 because that's fine for this request, the offered cost never gets sent. So in that case, we'd have to use the maximum cost value as the final value. But if there is negotiation, then we need to select the last offered cost that was accepted, and that will be the cost that we need to report on. And I think Julie's concerned that it's going to get complicated to do like to be like looking like, oh, if it doesn't have offered cost, use max cost. If it has an offered cost, use the last offered cost as the value. Like it's a little complicated, and so I'm not sure. I think she was voting for us to have like some field. I mean, I guess like it is a in the request form, it does show as the agreed, or I think that's what it's called, agreed cost. Trying to remember what what we call that.
Yeah, I
Don't know why.
think Jason,
Yeah.
you've added the fields, right? Which is kind of outside of the protocol. It's just a field in the patron request and other asks, which is the final cost.
Yeah,
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, let's chat with Julie about this. I mean, I just would like to see how complicated that report gets.
I think I'll find the thread. I think she messaged you while you were still out, so it was probably one of a million threads that you had going on. So I'll find that and see if I can we can re-engage on this topic, because she's the one who's built the query. Like, she's really the person to ask. But I understand that it is a little complicated that there are potentially two fields. At least we've eliminated that we're going to also have to pull in because of this ticket. We don't also have to contend with delivery costs
So
in the
what
reporting.
about, well, but maybe we could do that instead, right? Like that's kind of what I suggested the first time around, that the conditionals, the cost conditions go back and forth via the offered costs, but that once the supplier is saying we've actually shipped it, that's the message where I think is where the delivery costs come. And at that point, the supplier can set the delivery cost to what we're going to put in the agreed cost because they have the cost conditions that have gone back and forth. And so they can use the most recently agreed cost as the delivery cost. And it turns out that will actually be in line with what Alma does. And then in the reporting from the broker messages, the delivery cost will just happen that one time and it will be the final cost for that shipment because that's happening when it's shipped. So it's kind of the end of it, right?
We wouldn't want the supplier to actually be able to like enter cost though. Like,
No,
we've
they're
done a
not
lot
entering
of
it. The broker's doing
okay.
it.
Just
Yeah.
I okay. I just want to make sure.
Well, the issue is that there's no state, right? So it's just messages going back and forth. And I would really want to not put that state in if I can avoid it. So I mean, it really doesn't matter what field it gets transferred with. Unless you're saying to kind of send a message back from the.
I'm saying the supplier can send the message with the final cost. And it's not
What?
something that's going to be in the UI. It's going to be just based on what the agreed cost is. And the requester also has the condition with the agreed cost. So they could even reject the delivery cost, or it can like show a warning, delivery cost is not what was agreed to. Like it doesn't require the broker to keep state.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. Honestly, I don't know. Maybe it gets too complicated. Now we're gonna have three different fields.
Well, the
What
offer
if?
cost then will be just relevant for the conditions. It won't be specific to the like. It won't really be part of the request data. It will just be what we're using to send the conditional information alongside.
Let's keep that in mind. I wouldn't rule that out. But I think I wrote back to Julie. I think on that thread, Mallory, she never got back to me. I want to see that reporting query first before we can,
Okay.
because any solution requires either changing some code in ModRS or keeping track of the latest calls in the broker, and maybe what she considers complicated in the query is like an if-else statement, and I don't think we want to do it then. I mean, honestly, I don't understand what's complicated with that query. I mean, what's complicated about looking the last offered cost, even if that is not set, then go for maximum cost. But maybe I'm wrong. So let's review this report and then we can decide.
Okay. Kurt, we have not had a chance to chat with you yet. How are things going? We lose Kurt.
No, sorry, I double clicked my unmute thing, so I was sitting there talking with the thing still muted. So the 156, I'm still waiting to hear from Tara and Deborah about that. I think Deborah's back today, so hopefully we should be able to touch base on this one and figure out how to get a good replication of this so I can actually see the state that it's in. And then hopefully move forward with that. Best case scenario is that just adding an action to be available when it's in this state. But I do need to see how it's getting into this state because it kind of seemed like it shouldn't ever be there, but I need to, we just need to be able to replicate. So hopefully we can move forward on that one today. And then I've also been looking into 176, which is about the when we have a network failure, the requests don't get canceled. And this is getting a little into the weeds just because I need to kind of trace back how we are flagging requests as needing to be retried, and then we have this background task that finds the retried things and retries them. So I need to figure out, are they not getting retried? And how many times is it retrying it? And possibly do we need to add a condition where, like, okay, it's retried the max number of times. Now go ahead and just cancel it automatically. So it's something I really haven't looked in too much before. But I have a general idea of where I need to be digging for that one. So that's kind of where I'm looking right now.
Okay, cool. And yeah, this one's gonna be a little tough to like, it's hard to create a request that gets like, well, maybe we can just like put a broken request ID in or something so that it like gets stuck with the in a the problem is that these are stuck in like a an active state, not end of rota with ISIL as the broker. So it's, and these happen during that network timeout phase. So
Right.
I'm not sure how easy it's going to be for us to replicate, but I might have examples around in various test environments that we could play with. So I'll look for those.
Okay, well, I will let me do some I still have some initial investigation to do just with the retry mechanism, and I do kind of want to make sure that because I know that we did some modification of how the re Quest gets sent for working with the mode that we work with the broker, so I want to make sure that requests are even getting properly flagged and needing to be retried when we have a network error. So I just want to eliminate that as a possible issue as well. But once I get to that point where I could use some example or something like that, I'll come to you and let you know.
All right, thank you very much, Kurt.
Wasn't that the case that when they actually can be manually canceled still, though?
So I'm not sure if I told them to close these, so let me see. Yeah, so they must have used the manually close button, I assume, on this. Yeah, manually
Right.
close.
So, like, that's the only kind of cancel that should be expected if it's in a state that doesn't usually have a cancel request and it's only stuck because of the network problem. Like, what else would we
Yeah,
expect?
I guess,
I guess, like,
but
have the manual cancel show up as a button that's more prominent in the case of a network error. Or like better surface in network error, so it's not just hidden in the audit log.
well, we've had, I think part of the issue is that we've been trying to tell them not to use the close manually button because that like
But this is exactly the
busts
situation
things.
it's meant for when things
Right,
are
yeah.
already kind of fucked, so.
Right. That's true. But they said that they had some people who were like, instead of responding, like cannot supply, they were just manually closing, like
Well,
the
don't do
request.
that.
I know.
This is
I
what it's for. That's why
was like,
it's in the menu. It's like one of those switches where like it's got this bright red cover over it. You have to flip the cover up to operate the switch. That's why it's like up in the menu.
right. Yeah, but maybe you're right. Like maybe they're. if it's like if it could somehow be detected that it's in a broken state, like that the manual close button was there instead of the cancel request. I don't know.
Could we just put like a, we could also put like an extra pop-up when you hit manually close. Only do this if it's broken, because otherwise it's going to make things worse for everyone.
I guess we could do that. All other reshare users do not have a problem with that button, but yeah.
Australians are just more willful, you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. They're more exploratory. They're like, what's this button do?
Ooh,
They
it's hidden away
actually
over here. It's special.
they want that button to be hidden from general users and only present for like admin users. And I was like, I don't know if we can do that. So,
I
but
think we
that's,
should do that. That's a good idea.
yeah, if it could be tied to a
You should get
permission.
permission for it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
So
it'll
that
only be in
might
the UI
resolve
though,
some of
because
it,
like
but yeah.
we don't have permissions around action. So if you can do any action, you can do manually close when available. But you can have a permission that's hiding in the UI. But I really do wish there was some way to distinguish between the fake permissions and the real ones. But maybe it's, we just keep track of that somehow or something, because like I don't know. Because like, it was just hiding in the UI. It's almost more like a display setting than an actual permission.
Well, maybe I'll create a ticket for that because I think that is something that they would be interested in. But then we come back to if a request is broken and a staff member's trying to action it, they'll probably hit the cancel button and then it'll be stuck in cancel pending. So, and then they'll have to ask Trove to come in and manually close it for them, I guess, which
Which doesn't
okay.
have to bother us, so yeah, it's fine. But
Yeah.
the real issue here, though, is somehow we're having a network error. Why are we having a network error? The broker's right there. That's vital.
Well, didn't we get I thought we got a handle on the network errors that caught like that were causing all of those in that like window, that July 16 to July 23rd window. The or at least the ones that were breaking the request, I think, have been resolved.
Well, if we understood what happened there and we addressed that, then, and the manual closing is working as designed, then I don't really think there's a issue here beyond they would like the manual close to be hidden behind a permission, right?
Yeah, so you're just saying like we should just use manually close here and not do anything special. I think that's fine.
Yeah,
I think
that's what it's
Kurt
for.
wanted to look into something, but like maybe don't do any drastic changes.
Okay, well, I guess I still will just double check that the we are properly moving requests into the retry queue when they fail. But I won't go too much further than that. Just do basic investigation. But if we see that the manual close is acceptable here, then just leave it there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Always fun.
Well, that's
Okay.
reassuring. We fixed the network issue though, so we it's really just the timers that are flaky, and the rest of it is more or less working as we expect it to, at least.
Yeah, when I was out on vacation, you guys pushed a change to prod that I think I was out for like 2 days, and I thought you pushed a change to prod that more or less resolved this. Jakob, forget if
And
you.
so many things that I
I
can't
know.
remember. That was
I
there is a tick that I sent or failed to send errors since prod upgrade. Is that it?
Sorry.
IL def 170. Is that it?
Oops.
Fail to send error since product grade. Oh, that was one of them, but there was this one, which I think that and you I'm trying to remember what happened here.
I remember this one. This one was all of them, all of those network, those, all of those suspected network errors, they were not network errors. There was just bugs in other ass. This one, I let them know there, just scroll down. It was addressed by ensuring there is an existing proceeding request.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
So it is failing.
Did we fix the error handling so that it doesn't just say network error at inappropriate times?
We fixed the, I think this one was particularly crazy because Kurt said that the fix was committed on a different branch or something.
Yeah,
Like there
well,
was an obvious
we
null
had
counter
fixed it
exception.
for Minitex. But somehow the fix never made it back to
Oh yeah, I
the
remember that, yeah.
master. So it was just kind of a bug that was hanging out there. So it has been fixed since.
But I don't know why we're why did we think it was network errors?
Oh, any kind of issue that happens in the process of reading the message, I think gets bumped, gets logged as network error, I think, or something. I don't know. It's a little bit crude in there, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, we should actually improve that slightly so that if we successfully get a non-200 HTTP message, it can't be a network error. We got a response.
Oh
It
yeah. That's right. That's right. I mean, this
should
thing
only
just
say network error if
dies.
it gets like an exception connection timed out or something like that. Like either get the
No,
timeout or a
but
reset.
it wasn't it wasn't the Mother Earth saying a network error. It was actually Mother Earth dying with a 500
Okay, that's
exception and the broker considered that their network error maybe that's one. Let me just check. No, I don't even think this. It's an HTTP failure of status code 500. So maybe that's why somebody considered that a network error. I don't actually see in the logs that there were any network errors. Doesn't matter. Since that, I completely rewrote some error handling in the broker, so I don't think we. Because maybe it was going in some weird states. But yeah, let's not spend time on this now. I think the biggest issue right now is the socket exception that we just keep on seeing in the Slack channels.
do we need an issue for that, or is that what Wayne's kind of working on?
I think that ticket that you just assigned to him is okay, right?
Okay.
Maybe just tell him that this is important, because he was asking me yesterday, I asked him to like substitute for Wayne. He was asking what are the most pressing issues, but maybe just let make him aware that it's a customer problem now. This not receiving email notifications.
Yeah, this is the one I just changed of P2. And you added it. Okay. All
You know,
right.
I pulled those mock email logs, Jason, on prods from Kubernetes and mockup logs. I don't see any errors whatsoever. So
Like this is
it's
bizarre
gonna.
'cause like it's not even saying a connection timeout, it's saying a socket timeout, which is a lower layer TCP kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. So something must be exhausting sockets. So It's fucking monitoring that we have sucks because they could have looked at, like the container sockets.
Right, like they didn't, like for some reason we didn't set U limit or whatever.
No, there is U limit, but I don't know if they monitor what's getting close to that limit. Yeah, I'll chat with him a little bit. I don't know how much he can see right now, but he should be able to see something because we still keep on getting that exception, right? So okay. All right.
Well, welcome back, Jakob. We're
Thank you.
excited to have you back. I know you've been around a lot, but regardless, thank you. And I guess talk to you all soon. Talk to you in a few minutes at the staff meeting if we have one. I think we do.
I think we do.
We haven't said we
Yeah.
haven't. So.
All right, sounds good. See y'all soon.
Okay.
See ya.
Thank you, guys. Let's see some.